Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my name's Jess Phillips and this is Yours Sincerely. I've always been a prolific letter writer, both the good and bad kind, and know the power of putting words to paper. So in this podcast, I want to give my guests a chance to celebrate three people that mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. And when we've heard more about each person, they'll reveal how they would sign off each letter. Rebecca Adlington, OBE, is an Olympic swimmer and sports commentator. In 2008, she won two gold medals at the Summer Olympics and broke what was then the world record for the 800-metre final. She's been a part of the BBC presenting team for the Rio and Tokyo Olympics and currently runs Swim Stars, her programme to help children across the country learn how to swim. Today I'm excited to talk to her about the letters she would send to three people who mean the world to her. So, Becky, is that how you want me to refer to you?
Yes, please.
Becky,
yeah,
not Rebecca.
Unless you're going to tell me off.
I mean, I might tell you off. Depends what you say. I'll try not to tell people off. So, Becky, how are you?
I'm very well. Busy, but good. How are you?
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Well, I'm not that busy because I'm isolating with COVID. and so, actually, I am not very well and bored.
And yes,
I'm very, very pleased to say that my 13-year-old son has left isolation today and is able to go back to school tomorrow. And so I feel much better about not having to spend my cabin fever time with him.
I bet he is too.
He's literally running around the house being like, I can go to school, which is an unusual situation. So this podcast is all about letter writing. Are you much of a letter writer?
I'm not. I wish I was.
That's what everybody says. Everybody says, yeah. Oh, I wish I did it more.
Do you know what? I struggle to even write a card. My hand cramps up. I just type everything. I could type a letter, but I probably wouldn't write it.
See, your hand cramps up. You're like a superhuman being who has like won all these medals and you're telling me you don't have the stamina to write even a Christmas card. This is brilliant news. Those of us who are normal.
I do. I just now struggle. Like, so I've been doing loads of school visits and I had to sign my autograph. So in my name, Becky Adlington, on 3,000 leaflets. My name was barely recognisable by the time I even got like 20 in. It was just a squiggle.
Yeah. I had to do it once for a whole day, like 3,000 books and sit in this like warehouse. And by the end of it, my brain had gone to mush so badly that I had to ask them to basically read out quiz questions to me because I thought I was losing my mind.
You genuinely do. And I'm like, I can't keep signing my name. And then I then started to doubt my own spelling of my own name because I'd written it so many times. I was like, how is this possible?
Yeah, it is very, very weird. And I think that people wouldn't know that until if you've had to sign your name like 20 times is one thing, but thousands of times you start to lose the will to live. Also, it starts to phase in front of your eyes. Like, I'm going mad. I'm going slowly mad. I did it with the most recent book that I wrote. They sent me the pages that they were going to stick in the books, so I got to do it at home. So my son signed loads of them.
Why not?
And also, I was watching. Have you ever watched the TV programme This Is Us? It's very sad.
I know what you mean?
It's like a tearjerker. Very American. Very schmaltzy. And I was just crying all the way through whilst doing this. And so, loads of them are just tear stained.
Oh, well, that's quite a nice touch. I think people would pay a lot for tears.
Tears, that's it. Literally the tears of this woman on your pages of her book. So you're not much of a letter writer. Do you have any letters, like a real note that you've kept? Like, you presumably have letters from the Queen. I can only assume all Olympians have letters from the Queen.
Well, I don't know whether it's from Queenie herself. I think it's just more a case of probably her admin department. But definitely, I've saved
ruin all... the romance of it. She signed it herself.
Sorry. I've definitely got letters where it's like from the invitations to the garden party, to the to the Buckingham Palace event that they do after the Olympics. I've got the letter that was mine because I was in the New Year's honours list for my OBE, so I've got that. I've definitely kept all of them. Years ago, I got one from Boris Johnson, but after the London Olympics, saying well done. So I've kept all of ones where you go, you know what, it's a piece of history, isn't it?
So Boris Johnson wrote to you. Now, I had a Tokyo Olympian on, and they said that Boris Johnson, as the Prime Minister, had written to them post the Tokyo Olympics.
Yeah.
But for you, he was the London Mayor. So Boris Johnson, is what we're hearing, is likes to write to Olympians regardless of his job. But did you, when you won your medals, or even just partook in the Olympics, did you not receive one from the Prime Minister of the day then? Was it Tony Blair or...
I don't think
no,
I did.
It would have been David Cameron.
I don't think I did. Scandal.
Scandal.
Yeah. I don't think I did. I think Boris did it after London because it was the London Olympics.
I still think that the Prime Minister should write to you. Olympian.
I think they probably had better things to do than just write to a load of old Olympians. But still.
Well, Boris Johnson had nothing better to do because he did it after Tokyo. He was too busy having his parties and writing letters.
Probably I did it in isolation with COVID. We didn't have that then.
That's it. Just sat there writing letters. It's true, like being the Prime Minister and writing letters and the Queen and actually having to sign them. You're right. I don't think that the Queen actually signs them. She does sign every law in our country. So
that's enough, isn't it?
Yeah, that's enough. You say that. There's only about four that pass every year. It's not a lot of laws pass each year, but you sometimes see the whips running through Parliament and it's got her name signed at the bottom. So
that's pretty cool, isn't it? That's just amazing. You'd just love that. If I was like William or Harry or whoever of the royal family, I'd just be like, can I have your autograph? Even though you're my grandma and even though like you're my relative, can I have your autograph? Just because it's so cool.
I think they do all really like love the Queen. They're like, she's like top dog, isn't she? They all love her.
I know, but I've never heard anyone go, I've got the Queen's autograph.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something. My mate's nan turned 100 the other day.
Oh, well, yeah, you get
a letter from the Queen. She thinks it's digitally signed.
Oh, no.
I'm going to let the Queen off. She's very old herself.
Oh, gosh, yeah, she's got enough to do.
She's got enough to do.
I love the Queen. It's fine. We'll let her
May. I love the Queen. I wasn't raised to love the Queen, but I definitely have grown very fond of her.
I think she's just like my nana. Like, I just feel like whenever I've met her, and I was lucky I got my OBE from her, and she's so diddy.
She's tiny, isn't she? She's like this big.
Yeah, she reminds me of like a little Polly Pocket that you can just put in your pocket. I'm like, hop in, because I'm so not tiny. Like, I'm just so ginormous. And then there's her. And like, when I got my OBE, I did wear like heels as well. And I just felt enormous. And she was even up two steps from me and I still towered her. And I was like, oh, she's just so sweet. And she's just so lovely. And just, yeah, I love her.
Yeah. I mean, I get to see her, of course, in her proper crown. Because when she opens Parliament, she wears, well, she didn't last time, but all the times before, she doesn't just come as the Queen. She comes as the Queen.
The Queen, yeah.
She wears the garb. She wears like a robe and stuff and walks through with the robe going behind her. There's a room in Parliament called the Robing Room that is specifically for the Queen to go in and put on her robes.
My God, I want to go in the Robing Room.
To be fair, if you go to the Speaker's House to any event, like everybody just gets drunk and goes in there anyway. So you're allowed to go in there. It's fine. It belongs to us. Actually, it doesn't. It's a palace, but it is belongs to the people. But yeah, so okay, so you have got letters from the Queen one way or another. Have you got any other letters that you've cherished from like your childhood, or love letters from people?
No, I do keep things like me and my husband have like a memory box that we do put stuff, things in like that. So anything like in the past I did, but then once we've split up, I've always chucked them. So I've always had a memory box for each person I've been with. And then when that's it, you dumped, right, the box goes in the bin.
Really? I'd keep the box. Don't you want to look over?
No, because it's just like, it's just memories, isn't it? Because I just save things like cinema tickets and like tickets that you've been somewhere, and you're like, what's the point in keeping this?
And also, like, when you find those things, I'd like kept like a bus ticket day saver, and for the life of me, could not understand what the significance of it was.
I know.
But it's just a day saver, like.
I know, pointless.
Why have I kept this?
Pointless. I have written a letter. One of my friends made me write him a letter. This was like 10 years ago, made me write him a letter to open in 2022. And he's got it to open this year. He hasn't opened it yet. And he's going to open it this year. So I have done a letter to somebody in a different aspect that they now get to open this year. And I can't think for the life of me what I even wrote.
Oh my gosh. So there's no significance. Like, what a cruel game to play on someone. We do that, though. We do it with Strictly Come Dancing. On the first day, we write who we think is going to win, and then we seal it and put it on the mantelpiece. And my son Danny gets it right every single time.
Really? That's pretty, like, a special gift, that.
Special gift. I know. I should put a bet on, shouldn't I? I don't ever do that. I definitely should do that. That is brilliant that you made somebody wait and you cannot remember the significance of the letter. That is...
He's got the letter. He's put it in his diary. So I gave him the letter straight away when I wrote it like 10 years ago. And he's still one of my good friends. We're still really, really close. So we kind of knew we'd still be really close. And I just said, and he was like, I'm going to keep this. And he wanted to do it. He asked me to physically write a letter for him to read in 10 years.
How brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's like a time capsule. It's like Blue Peter time capsule.
I know. I just have no idea what I wrote.
That is brilliant.
I really hope I did something really clever and witty, but I don't think I would have done.
I know. Yeah, it would be terrible to 10 years later be a disappointment.
No. Just
really build
pie.
Up this this note. So I have asked you to think about three different people you would want to send three different letters to, and to sort of express your feelings for those people and how they've made you feel. So the first one would be somebody who means the world to you. So who would that be?
I have chosen, this is just very obvious, but my husband.
Oh, no, hardly anyone chooses their partners.
Really?
Most people choose their mums.
Do you know what? It was a debate between my mum and my husband, but I very often give a lot of love to my mum on these sorts of things. Okay. And I was like, you know what? My poor dad never gets a look in. And yet my dad is equally wonderful. And then, so I was then thinking about my dad. And then my husband was like, oh, you never choose me. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I don't. And I should, because I love you a lot. And you're very, you know. Well,
I mean, you literally chose him.
Yeah, exactly.
In life.
Exactly. But yeah, no, my husband, yeah, definitely was up there on the list of people to choose.
So what is your husband's name?
Andrew.
Andrew. And tell me about him. What does he do with his life? Where did you meet him?
Do you know
I
what?
Sound like I'm your mother-in-law and I'm interviewing him to see whether you should be marrying him.
I know. So most people are very shocked about this, but we actually met on online dating. And
how
we met
exciting.
On, yeah, we met on Bumble. So that's the one where the girl talks first. So
can I just say, I work with Bumble quite a lot and they're like a really feminist organisation. Yeah, they're really, really good and trying to improve like online spaces for women and change legislation. So thumbs up for Bumble.
Woo.
I'm not sponsored by Bumble or anything. I met my husband before the internet. So
do you know what, though? You get to the point when you... get to a certain age where I'm like, I'm never going to meet somebody out. That just does, it's not possible.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Because also, I don't go out. So that's not going to happen. So I kind of took the plunge, and believe it or not, Andy was the first person I met for a date off online dating.
That's got to be the best hit ratio in the whole world. Ever. Did you go on any dates with anybody else afterwards to check?
No.
That's it.
Well, he had been on online dating for years and he had had loads, whereas I only joined and swiped for him. I spoke to a few people, but because I was quite like, I had quite a lot of rules with like, I was like, you know what, if you can't hold a conversation with me for a couple of days, I'm not going to give you my number or meet up with you. I think you've got to be able to hold a conversation and keep the conversation flowing and just have that connection. And if you're a bit pushy and... quite a few people would just be like, are you that Olympian? And I'm like, well, right, that's not attractive, mate. Yeah. So I was like, no, delete. So I don't know. I just kind of wanted someone that just was a bit more normal, just every day, just like chatty, just fun loving, that there wasn't too posy or say something silly in their bio. Whereas Andy just had a picture of him and the dog, and I just loved the dog. So I was like, yeah, why not?
And the dogs, it's a winner. It seems like they're all eating pizza. I've only ever been a tourist, a Tinder tourist, because, I've been married since the dawn of the internet. It's just lots of people seems their main interest, and by people I mean men, their main interest is eating pizza.
To be fair.
You've got to have something more than that.
Yeah, but to be fair, I'm quite game for that.
I mean, I like pizza.
I like pizza. So that's fine by me. So, yeah. Luckily, we didn't have pizza on our first date, but still, it was a win.
Where did you go on your first date? I'm so intrigued by the world of internet dating.
I know. So Andy's from Liverpool and I live in Manchester. So I went over to Liverpool and we went to those like crazy golf, like the junkyard golf. They're all called different, where it's like an indoor crazy golf sort of place. And then we just had some food and then he took me to this like secret whiskey bar after, which was pretty cool. So yeah, it was lovely. Had a great time.
And on your first date, did you think I might marry this man or did
you? Oh gosh, no.
No. Because that doesn't happen in real life. That only happens in TV programmes.
No.
But you must have thought, wow, Bumble. You must have thought, I might have thought, well, online dating's great because I really like the first one, that maybe I should go back in and find out more. What you would have found is that online dating is actually a total snake pit of horror.
Yeah, to be fair, loads of my friends have got horrific stories. And also, like, I even struggled just with the conversations of the other people that I didn't even match, that I was like, this is terrible.
It's a lot of admin, people tell me. Like, it's a lot of effort to keep those conversations going, like, whatever.
It definitely was. So I think for me, no, straight away, I was kind of like, okay, this guy is like fun. He's got great, like, I don't know, just he gets it. He's just normal. He was just like not trying to be anything he wasn't, just who he was. And I was just like, okay, this is good. So we went on a few more dates and then, yeah, I was like, okay, I really like this one. He might be a keeper.
It's funny. I've never been on a date in my life. This is a new phenomenon. I've never been on I've known my husband since I was like 11 years old and people just went to parties and copped off with people and then maybe kept copping off with them.
Yeah.
They didn't, like, you didn't go on, like, go on dates with people. That is like an American and a modern phenomenon. But I just feel like, is it never awkward when you're with a stranger?
Do you know what? And that was the one thing that I thought it was going to be. But I think that's why I knew, okay, this guy's nice, because it never, I don't know, it just wasn't awkward at all. It was like we knew each other straight away. Also, it's like, Andy gets, like, it's fine sometimes to be quiet. Like, I hate people that, you don't need to talk just for the sake of talking. If there is a natural pause in conversation, neither one of us felt awkward. It was just kind of like, okay, let's just, do you want to get another drink? It's like, yeah. So we just kind of kept the flow there sort of thing rather than it feeling forced. And that's what I kind of liked about it, I think.
And how long have you been married?
We got married last August.
Oh, not long then. Still in the first flush. How long were you together before you got married?
3.5 years.
Oh, ages.
Yeah.
Ages.
Yeah, we're fine. We had a baby before we got married, so we did things the complete wrong way around.
Yeah. Me too. I had a baby first. And if you can get through that, you can get through anything.
I think so. I think the wedding's just the fun party bit.
The wedding is and a marriage is like nothing. So I remember when my husband was turning 30, people kept saying to him,
oh, do you feel like you're getting old? And he was like, well, I've got two children and a mortgage, so no, I don't feel like the age really matters. I feel like basically my life's been ruined for some time.
I also feel like we're old because we mostly discuss hoovering and children and like, and where's the Tupperware?
Me and my friends sit down round and have genuine conversations about mortgages. I'm like, that, what has happened to us? It's a disgrace.
Yeah, no, and to be fair, a turning point for me of feeling old was I knew I liked day drinking and I then in bed at 9 o'clock. I don't want to go evening drinking. I want to do day drinking.
Can I just say this is the greatest life hack in the world and people should tell younger people this. I want to start drinking. I want to start drinking about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and yeah. I want to be at home by 8 o'clock.
100%. I am that friend that is like, oh, should we go out for dinner? Yeah, 6 o'clock. Like, not going out past seven. I'm like, no. As long as I've got my PJs on and I'm comfy, hair on my head, makeup off, no bra, by 9 p.m.
When I was young, I used to not go out until like 11:30 at night.
Oh,
what
yeah.
What is wrong with me?
No, yeah, can't do that. No.
But when you were young, presumably you were in training all the time. Did you get to have like a proper...
We got like...
Wild
2 weeks...
childhood.
No, it was wild 2 weeks. That was it. Like, it was a 2 week block or a 2 week window. And then no, that was it. Right, back to hard work. So no, I didn't. But you know what? I wasn't really bothered. I kind of feel like I made up for that in my later 20s with like, and it's much more fun when you're older.
Yeah, you've got
as
more
well.
Money and agency.
Yeah, and also, like, I then drink a nice drink. I'm not drinking, like, a WKD. I'm drinking, like, a nice glass of something. I'm like, okay, this is much better.
My son made me buy him some WKD from the shop the other day, and I just thought, get a nice bottle of red.
No, I can't do, like, shots and drinks. I can get enough from the alcohol that is nice and a nice glass of wine. That's going to get me hammered enough. I'm all right, thanks.
It must have been hard, though, like doing all that training. And so presumably you didn't know Andy at that point in your life in the sort of in the years of, I just imagine that anybody who is successful at sport gets up at 4 a.m. and their parents drive them miles and miles every single day. Like that is basically my I probably saw it on Grange Hill once or something. And now
that is genuinely what happens. So you're fine.
Yeah, okay, good. So you get up really early in the morning and like get driven around, and then before you get to school and stuff, like.
Yeah, 4:30 in the morning. Used to wake up, literally before school, after school. My mum put more pressure on me to pass my driving test first time than she did to win an Olympic gold medal.
Did you pass it first time?
I did.
I didn't, third time.
Oh, no. No, my mum pumped everything. She was like, here, take the money, take the lessons. To be fair, she used to also make me, because I had my sister's car, so when I used to go training at like 4:30 in the morning, because the roads were quiet when I was learning, not when I was like 12. This was a genuine in a learner stage. She just used to sit in the passenger seat and let me drive 45 minutes to the pool. She used to go back to sleep just so that... Just because she then could, like, you're getting your driving practice. There's nothing on the road. I get to chill out. Off you go. That's what I did for 3 months before I passed.
It must be so hard to be, like, really good at a sport. I have no concept of it. I have no concept of being... I suppose that everybody has a thing that they have dedicated thousands of hours to.
Yeah.
But it does just, like, it really... It feels like extreme when it's at sport for some reason. It feels like a sort of an extreme commitment.
I think, though, I think it's only because it's a physical commitment.
Maybe.
I think it's because other things like music, drama, any job, you like you say, you have to commit the same, probably more hours to. But it's just the fact that it's not as physical, is it? So you're not having to...
I mean, in normal other jobs, the end result that you're aiming for probably lasts more than 3 minutes. You
yes.
know what I mean? Like, so
yes.
like, you know, you're doing an awful lot of training for something that is very, has a brief window of time. Whereas, you know, the rest of us, we do considerably less training, but the work is stretched over a longer period of time.
That is true.
Getting the result is stretched over a long... It's like, I think, like, people who run 100 metres, like, all of that for 9 seconds.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, at least mine lasted 8 minutes.
8 minutes, yeah, there you go.
Not 30.
But that makes me feel physically sick, the idea of doing anything really like at the highest peak for 8 minutes.
Yeah, to be fair, I genuinely always felt like I was going to be sick as well, yeah. So don't worry.
Oh, good, I'm glad. That's not for you, but for me. Because I always just felt like when I was made to run the 800 metres at school, I felt like I was going to vomit after 400 metres.
Yeah, it does something to you. It's not okay.
So he didn't know you through any of this. And so there is a demarcation. Do you think that helps? That there's like a difference in your life now and your life then?
I think as well, not only that, but I'd had my daughter already as well. So Summer was 2 years old. And I think I massively changed when I became a mum. Mm. So I think that was a huge difference as well, because not only he didn't necessarily see that kind of side of me being an athlete, but he also got Mum Becky, which is much probably softer and nicer and everything else. So but yeah, my lifestyle was different, and I thought that was going to scare people off. I thought it was like, oh, okay, like does somebody gonna accept I've got a 2-year-old, etc., etc.? But he was like, oh, I love kids. And yeah, he's been ace the whole way through. He's just like, him and Summer get on like a house on fire, which is great.
Yeah, it's nice. I often think, in my office, two of the women who work for me are stepmothers. And I just think that stepparents are the most maligned people in literature. Like, we write about them like they are, like, you know, they're basically going to try and murder their stepchildren.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah, and they're going to, like, lock them in cellars and make sure that their own children get the best of it. And it is just not my experience of stepparents at all. Quite the opposite, that, like, people are totally dedicated to their stepchildren and, like, feel exactly about them as they feel about their own children.
100%. Andy is also, like, is so good at kind of those, because she's so young as well, she's not going through her teens, like playing with her and creating games and all that. Like, I feel like they're on the same mental age sometimes. I'm like, they just get it.
I mean, I never had the patience to play a game with a child repeatedly. I've got one round in me, and then I'm like, really the same thing over and over again, whereas my husband could literally just keep doing it over and over again. I was like,
do you know what, I'm fine at games. I'm fine if it's like a physical, like a proper game, like a game of Uno or a board game.
Yeah,
absolutely fine. For me, it's when you're playing an imaginative game,
made up game.
I'm like, okay, I don't get it, and then I start picking holes with the game, even though a 5-year-old has come up with it. But I'm like, but this will never happen. And it's her imagination. Yeah, I just ruin it with my practicality.
When they put on plays and it's like, there's no story arc. I'm like there 35 minutes later and I'm like that. Nothing has actually happened in this play yet. And yet you're demanding that I sit and watch it. My children are old now. I'm very, very grateful to say they don't put on plays for me anymore. Now I sort of miss it now that I've said that. Kind of missed the plays, but no. It was sort of like, so you really haven't thought about the blocking of this play, you haven't thought about the acts, you haven't thought about any of the character development. You've just said, Mom, sit down, I'm going to put on a play, and lined up a load of teddies and are just talking to yourself.
To be fair, I feel like I've had to become the actor, because it's like, mummy, watch me do this, and then they do something that's literally like they just stand up and you're like, wow. And you literally like, what if I just wowed at him?
Oh, no. I remember, like, the first time my son waved and we were, like, all clapping. I was like, God, we're really celebrating mediocrity. It's like, we're teaching our children that basically you can just do the bare minimum and we're all going to just be like, woo!
Well done!
It's true. That is true.
That's part of being a parent, isn't it? You roll with it. You love it.
Yeah. I mean, I do love it. I also sometimes loathe it. but mostly I love it. I wouldn't change it, but they are a pain in the bum sometimes. Quite a lot of the time. I have teenage sons, though, so that's like their role in life is to be a pain in the bum.
Yeah, teenagers, there. Everyone is.
So what does Andy do? What does he? What's his job?
So he works more in facilities management and kind of looking after that sort of stuff. So again, totally different to me and completely nothing that I have any knowledge on. I just go, how's work? And he's like, yeah, okay. I'm like, okay, bye.
I literally don't know what, it's like Chandler Bing. I don't know what my husband does for a job. I literally don't know. I've got no idea.
I think that's the best way. He convinced me what he wants, and then I just don't know the ins and outs. But I only know from stuff like now, if we even go to a hotel, he's got his facilities manager brain on, that he starts looking at around him and he's like, oh, well, that wouldn't pass and that wouldn't. And I'm like, we're just in a hotel. Let's just crack on. We're not here to work or anything else. We don't need to inspect the building.
Oh, I'm so delighted that you've made the first ever date you ever went on for online work. This is delightful. So how would you sign up a letter to Andy? What would you say to him?
I just think he's one of those people that is just very laid back, very chilled. Yes, obviously I tell him I love him, etc. But he doesn't, he's just such a laid back guy. So I think it would just be more a case of being like, I'd want to thank him for just like keeping me steady, because I can be a bit up and down. So he keeps me on track. He keeps me steady. He keeps everything going. And it sometimes he is a bit underappreciated, because me and my family are very loud females. Mm. And you know what?
You've got a lot of sisters, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got two sisters. Mm. And we're normally very vocal. And he's got two sisters as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a very female heavy environment. Mm. And he deals with it incredibly well and doesn't always get the appreciation he deserves. So I'd definitely thank him for that, and just for being my absolute rock. Like, I do give him a lot of crap a lot of the time, and he does put up with it, bless him.
Do you think he'd say the same about you? Say you were his rock?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, we're a proper team. Like, we work together. So I would just say thank you and just be like, we've got each other, we're like partners in crime. Like, you've got my back, I've got yours, sort of thing. And obviously, I love him. I love him to death. So, yeah. Aww. Very soppy.
Oh, it's not soppy. It's nice. Are you going to be in Birmingham for the Commonwealth Games, by the way?
I hope so. Yeah. Really
I feel,
hope so.
As somebody sitting in Birmingham right now, I just still don't really believe it's going to happen. There we go.
Oh, it's definitely happening. I know that. But yeah, it's one that...
The swimming isn't here though, actually. The swimming isn't in Birmingham.
No, there's the new leisure centre, isn't it? They've spent like 60 million on the new leisure centre or something. That's gonna
not
be...
in Birmingham.
Yeah, but it's going to be great for community and stuff after. Yeah. To be fair, I only learnt recently that the villages are all spread out as well. So there isn't like normally for athletes, you have one village.
One place, yeah.
Yeah, where we all stay, every country's together, every sport's together. Whereas this time I have heard it's all over.
Yeah, they
as
started
well.
To build it, but because of COVID, it just went totally tits up. So yeah. It's going to be all over the place, which is weird, but...
It is, but at the same time, it might be better for those venues that if you can be closer to your venue, it's probably going to make life easier for the athletes, I guess.
That's true, because if you're like doing the velodrome, it'll be in London. That's nowhere bloody near.
Yeah, a long commute every day.
Get on your bike. You like your bike? Exactly. Get to the velodrome on the bike.
That's your warm-up.
You could probably swim to London somehow through the canals.
Oh, I don't think I'd want to, though. No, I'm all right.
Oh, dear. So the second letter I asked you to write was to somebody who's no longer here. So who would that be to?
My grandpa, who I always call my Gromps. I don't know why I call him Gromps. From a young age, I've always gone Gromps, not grandpa. But yeah, my grandpa has sadly passed away, but he was my absolute like hero. He was like my biggest supporter. He used to take me training once a week, and he was just like, he'd put Saga radio on. I'd be like, Grandpa, I'm like 12. Can we listen to something else? Like,
he's not wrong. Just... Saga radio is good.
Yeah, but I was 12 for a 12-year-old. And he'd just be so funny. I just loved my grandpa. And after the session, even though he didn't know much about it, he was, how are you feeling then, Becky? Just spoil me rotten. He was like, proper world. And then every time I used to race, my grandpa used to shout. So everyone else before the race, like, go, Becky, like this, like all cheering. And my grandpa would stand up and he'd do it quite near the end when it's quite getting to that point where everyone needs to shut up. He'd just stand up and go, dig in, Becky. And I'd always be like, there's my Gromps. And it would just be like that comforting thing when I heard his voice. I could always hear him going, dig in. And I'm like, oh, bless him.
Oh, he must have been so proud of you. Did he live to see you win your medals and things?
He did. Yeah, yeah. No, he did. He was the proudest man ever. whatever. He loved all of us, like all of his grandkids, he absolutely loved. But it was just like, he was just the proudest man ever of all of us, and he loved it. Anything that he could do, they were so involved. Like, they weren't those grandparents that you just saw every blue moon and they gave you a lollipop. It was like, we were over there all the time, holidays together. He would take us me training once a week, and he was just like, he was such a nice man. No one who's ever met my grandpa has ever had a bad word to say about him. He was just like one of the most like gentle, nicest people. And he would talk to anyone. We'd have come out every single week, he'd made a new friend at the pool. And I'm like, who's this grandpa? And he'd just be sat there chatting to somebody. He just loved talking to anyone. He was one of those and just loved it.
And like, I know how I feel when I watch people who I've never met swimming or running or cycling for Great Britain. And I know how it will get me out of my chair. And then when they win and then they have the things rammed in their face and they have to say something like meaningful when they're probably knackered, like my heart bursts with pride. I cannot imagine what that would be like if that was my child or my grandchild. Like, I already feel like my heart is going to burst when I watch those events, and especially like the big set, but like especially like London 2012, like every single one, I was just like a wreck. I was like crying, like with pride of the people, and not even necessarily just the British people, just people who got against adversity and trained to do these amazing things. I cannot imagine how your granddad survived that level of pride. I feel it might kill me if I felt that proud.
To be fair, he was like the same, like my grandpa, bless him, he was like 6'4". So he had,
my God, grandparents are small.
I know, but he was so, he was such a tall man. And as he got older, he then struggled with mobility, like his knees and hips and whatever, as he got older. And for the London Olympics, I remember that they were all in our living room. And obviously I wasn't there, got told this, that once I won, bear in mind, bless him, he struggled to walk at that stage, literally jumped up and cheered, and everyone went, oh, grandpa, like, because everyone then catered to him, because he just burst with pride, exactly like you said, just kind of.
I think my heart might actually come out of my chest.
I know. And he was, I think that's what happened to him. He just, his lease of life, and he just jumped up, bless him, like the cutest thing ever. But yeah, to be fair, he was even like that with my sisters. And no matter what it was, he was one of those people that just burst with pride. He would tell everyone, my granddaughters are doing this. It's like, they don't care, grandpa. But like, he just, bless him, he would. He just was full of pride. And to be fair, I'd be the same as you.
I can't wait to be a grandparent for this reason. I can't wait to be a grandparent for this exact reason. Like, you just get to like be chuffed about everything
and just spoil them as well. Like, my mum does it with my kids. Like, my daughter's not the best eater, bless her, and if she hasn't eaten a dinner, I'm like, I'll come in and mum will be like, yeah, she's not really eating a dinner. And I'm like, oh, okay, so what's she had then? Well, I just gave her some chocolate buttons. I'm like, are you kidding me? So all she's eating all day is chocolate. And I'm like, when I was younger, I was made to sit at the table and everything was gone before I even dared get up. There were some times I used to have to sit there for 2 hours.
Yeah, until me too. My in the dark. Everyone else has gone to watch the telly. Yeah. You sat there.
And I was like, and then there you are, just giving her chocolate buttons. And she's like, I can, I'm a grandparent now. And I'm like, oh, all right.
I know my dad, we weren't allowed to have like any fizzy drinks, and we certainly weren't allowed to drink Coca-Cola because it was from like the evil empire of America. He believes that, you know, anything that is, he's basically, you know, one, a hop, skip and a jump away from being a communist. And so he believes anything like capitalist is bad. So we weren't allowed to have any Coca-Cola or anything like that, or McDonald's or anything. And my kids, now he's got cans of Coke in the fridge. He's like, we weren't allowed to watch Disney because Disney was something to do with fascism. I can't even remember. But we weren't allowed to watch Disney. So, I mean, we did, but not when he was around. But my kids, like, he's like whacking on all the Disney films, feeding him Coca-Cola. I'm like, that, what happened to you?
Yeah, you've changed.
Yeah, and I also realised when I had kids that the word spoilt, you just say it as if it's like, that's the word for that thing that happens. But it's because they literally spoil them. So when you get them back, they're broken. The child is broken. Like, and they're like, I'm like,
you have to undo everything.
I'm going to have to really train it back in again. You have literally spoilt them. That's like in the literal sense of the word, you have spoilt my child. And now I've got to go through a week long routine to get it back.
That is so true. I'd never thought of that until you've just said that. That's actually broken my heart a little bit.
It's oh, fine. God, you have to accept the breakages, but it is like, oh God, I'm going to have to do this again. I've got to go through this whole bloody rigmarole of making sure that they understand the rules again.
Do you know what though? I'm going to do it with my kids have a kid. Yeah, so
it all the time.
Yeah, so why not? We've just got to embrace this cycle.
I already do it with my children as they get older. I am much more like, oh yeah, just do whatever you want than I was when they were little. Because when they're little, you have to hold a line. Otherwise, your life is a misery. You won't sleep. You won't, like, things won't happen in time if you don't hold a line. Whereas now my kids look after themselves. I'm much less strict about anything. I'm just like, whatever, do whatever you want. Because it's not going to break my life into pieces if they don't go to sleep.
No, I totally get it. I'm like that even now with my six-year-old, whereas my one-year-old, I'm like, no, he must bath and he must do this because he will be up the whole entire night if he does not. So it will get done.
Yeah, all the tea in China, I wouldn't go back to having a one-year-old. So all power to your elbow.
Thanks for that. Thanks.
Such hard work. He's about to become the best of himself, though. Like when they're 18 months old, they're like proper quality. Like they start like being funny and...
Yeah. Okay, a couple more months to go.
It's so tiring. It is. Oh. And nobody tells you quite how tiring it is, I don't think.
No. He was up last night from about 11 till 2. Oh, I'm like, oh, man. Let's just go to sleep.
Oh, God. And nobody tells you in the middle of the night that you're definitely going to utter obscenities at your children.
Oh, yeah. Just go to sleep.
Yeah. It's like, why are you such a knob? Like, just go to sleep. Just go to sleep. And then in the morning, you're like, oh, I love them so much. It's like, it doesn't matter in the morning, but in the night, it's like the worst thing.
Oh, it is the worst. You just do it for your sanity, though. You don't mean even when you say it, you just have to get your anger
also
out.
You have to have a go at, you know, the aforementioned somebody. Andy. So I just used to have a go at my husband because I was like, well, there's no point having a go at the baby. It can't cognitively understand this. So no doubt this is somehow your fault.
Oh, see, the other one's always asleep. So I'm like, I can't even have a go at my husband.
Oh, yeah, not waking up the other one. That's a dreadful thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that your granddad didn't spoil you there. He pushed you on to achieve great things, it sounds to me.
He massively did. Oh, he was the best. Even like little things, he used to cut my toast. This was a spoiling. I used to ask, like, if I had beans on toast, he used to cut my toast into little squares so I didn't even have to cut it up. He used to cut my toast into like tiny little bite-sized squares, bless him. Always used to do that for me. And then he used to put all the toast around the edge and then the beans in the middle so I only had to scoop it. I'm like, oh, thanks, Grumps.
Oh, I think that's the best way to eat it there. Toast around the edge, beans in the middle. That's the only way to fly.
Yeah, bless him.
So how would you sign off a letter to your granddad? When did he die?
A couple of years ago now, three years ago.
And he was quite old when he died.
Yeah. Oh, he'd lived a full life. 100% lived a full life, bless him. It's just, it never seems long enough when you're the grandkid child, because even then it was like, he never met Albie. He'd met Summer, but he's never met my little boy and things like that, that you do like, oh, you'd have loved him. But it's just, hey-ho, he did live a very full life and an amazing one as well. My grandpa was always my hero, so I'd definitely sign it off with just like, you're my hero. Like, he was like one of my role models. Like, I always just, if I could be any, even like 1% or even like half as good as my grandpa, like, I know I'm doing all right in life. That's like my measure of life. Like, if I'm a little bit like my grandpa, I'm good. I'm solid. I'm fine. So yeah, definitely my hero. Definitely. He's so regularly talked about as well. It's like he's still here. I feel like I'm just going to phone up. And my grandpa did that really sweet thing where you would phone him and he'd answer the phone with his phone number.
That number, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, I know your number. I've just phoned you. But thanks.
My grandparents lived in the constituency I now represent. Their phone number I could, like they used to do the same, like just say their phone number. So, you know, I could recite it. My grandparents have been dead for nearly 20 years. I could still recite their telephone number. And I recently, because we do phone canvassing in elections, I rang my grandparents' phone number and it wasn't them anymore. It wasn't even the house that they lived in, but I rang their phone number and I just was half expecting somebody to pick up the phone and be like, 783,
yeah.
And like say the number. But they didn't. But it is a weird thing to ring your grandparents. That kids these days won't know phone numbers, will they? I can still.
No.
I remember all of my friends' phone numbers from when I was a kid.
To be fair, I could only probably, I think there is two people. I know my husband and my mum's mobile number. Nobody else's.
I don't know anybody's mobile number apart no. from my own. I don't no. even know my husband's. I know it's got a lot of ones in it.
Yeah, but as in like otherwise like you just have no need, whereas but yeah, when I was little I knew everyone's phone number. That's
everybody's
how you remember
phone
it.
Number.
yeah
and I still know them. I mean none of those people live in those houses anymore, so it's a futile piece of information, but I still know those numbers. I could still ring them should I need to. My dad still has a home phone, and so yeah, and it's still the same number it was when I was a kid, so
yeah. I'd probably put the phone number on the letter just for like nostalgic reasons. I just would. I think it's just like that's what I just always remember. You just have to. It'd just be like the sweetest thing ever. Just you're my hero. Phone number. love you, Becky.
Oh, that is lovely. The phone number. I love that. That is from a bygone era. It's just like, it's a lot to say. Like, it's like 7 digits long. I'm like, you really, really don't need to say this many digits.
I know, my grandpa used to say the area code.
Yeah, as well.
Yeah. So a full 11 digit phone number. The whole thing. But I think he was a policeman. So maybe it's a policeman thing. So I don't know.
Yeah.
You just answer the phone with like, hello. Whereas not.
But if you were calling from a phone box, by the time someone's got through 11 digits, your tempy had begun. I mean, like, hurry it up, hurry it up.
That is very true.
That's another thing that also doesn't exist anymore, phone boxes.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll be back for Rebecca's final letter after a short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So the final letter I asked you to think about was to somebody who has affected your life, but, you know, wouldn't necessarily know the effect that they've had on you.
This one was the hardest one to choose somebody. And I've chosen my first swimming coach. So not my first teacher, but my first swimming coach, which was a guy called Ian Negus. And I've done it because I don't speak to him anymore. It was one of those that, after Beijing and London, I briefly saw him at a few things and had a conversation, but it's not like, I was so young when I left the swimming club. I was like 11, maybe 12. No, 12. So I was so young that it's not something that I'm like ever going to stay in touch. And yet I will always remember him part of my swimming journey. And I think he doesn't, not in a bad way, but the credit goes to my coach who I then had from 12 until
course,
then throughout
yeah.
my career, which was Bill. So I feel like he never got any sort of kind of the credit probably he deserved for kind of that. He kind of started that journey. He was the whole reason I went to my coach in the first place. So if it wasn't for him, I actually wouldn't have ever ended up with my coach. And then who knows if I'd have ever achieved my success.
But so tell me how it happens. Like, you know, I go to the swimming pool. I used to swim for my school and I was good at swimming. But like, so, you know, presumably it takes somebody spotting that you've got talent.
Yeah, well, not really. It's not really like football where there's like...
Is it not?
somebody's like scouting out and like doing all of that. For me, we joined a club when I was like 8 or 9, and then my sister swam there as well. And it was just our local swimming club. It was just because we live around the corner. It wasn't because we had picked it for any other reason than convenience. And it was just, Ian was great. He was always like a fair man. Everyone liked him. He was very much that father figure. And even though he used to, if you were talking too much, he used to make you get out and do 10 press ups. So I was constantly doing press ups just because I was always talking too much. And then it was kind of Ian who had the conversation with my mum and dad that was like, yeah, Becky's really good, and kind of Becky kind of needs a bit more training now, because a club environment, you only swim so many times a week, it's kind of not the progression that you really need. So it was my kind of my mum and dad and that spoke to Ian, and Ian was like, I think you should look into Bill Furness. I think he'd be really good for Becky and he's a great coach. So I don't think it ever would have happened if it wasn't for Ian having that conversation. And also him having that conversation, he never tried to hold on to a swimmer that he wanted them to stick at that club. He was like, no, I want them to reach their potential and go off and achieve great things. And kind of takes a lot to constantly pass people on to other people. And yet he did. So it's a lot of it was him as well. And plus, he kind of sparked that. That was my first club. That was that first initial thing of like, okay, I like swimming. This is what I want to do. If I'd had a bad coach or a negative experience, I probably wouldn't have taken it any further. So I kind of owe a lot to him.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite a thing that he was nice to you and you liked it. And, you know, you stuck with it. Because there must be, and this is a sad thing that we must, like, you know, try and do as much as possible about, which I know that most of you who end up as great sports people then go on to dedicate your time to making sure that other kids can break through and find their way, is that, like, there must be kids swimming in pools in my constituency who and going to clubs and, like, who, because they don't have that one person or that thing that that pushes them forward or the opportunity, that, you know, we're missing out on all those gold medals.
Oh, yeah, there'll be loads. And that's up and down the country. That's up and down different sports, different activities, of course. It only takes one bad experience for that child to go, I don't want to go back.
Yeah.
Or one thing to happen that goes, you know what, that's not for me. And actually, it could be that it is for them. It just wasn't the right coach. Like, I don't like a coach that, I don't know, don't get it when people go to these, like, boot camp things.
Yeah.
Like, if someone shouts in my face, I'm either going to laugh or I'm going to walk off. Yeah. Like, it doesn't motivate me, and I don't want you to shout in my face. I'm literally like, I was one of those kids that if I got told off at school, I'd laugh. I can't deal with it. So I just end up laughing.
It's funny when people share about you.
It just makes me laugh. So I think, I just wonder, all those kids that they're not responding to being taught in that. So I guess it's at school as well. Everyone learns in different ways. And I just think it's fascinating because swimming clubs, sport has this perception that you need somebody that shouts an authority and this. Whereas a lot of people don't respond to that. And it's funny because Ian and my coach, Bill, who ended up being my coach, very similar personality traits, like very fair, very equal, very kind of really level sort of guys. You don't ever see them really get stressed, really kind of them sorts of characters. So it's funny how they were both very similar.
It's, I think you're right, though. And I think that some of that deficit, certainly in swimming, is how we teach it. So my school, I went to a grammar school in Birmingham and it had a swimming pool, and there is actually a comprehensive school in my constituency that also has a swimming pool, although it's a constant drain on the resources and we're always constantly having to fundraise for it. But anyway, we do that. But the problem was that, and if you didn't, you'd get on a coach and go off to the local swimming pool to do your lessons. But it was sort of like, you know, you were punished for, like, not getting changed quickly. And it's like, you'd swim for half an hour and it just, the whole thing felt so pressured. Like, swimming lessons always just felt really horrible and pressured. And like, and then the girls thing about everybody then pretending that they've got their periods. I mean, one time my swimming teacher said to me that your mum needs to get you a gynecologist appointment. Like, there's something wrong with you, because I just was saying that I had my period because I didn't want to do it.
You've had your period for 6 months now.
No, yeah, that's it. It's a constant period, what can I say? It's an odd thing. And also, I wish, if I now was teacher, I would say to girls, I know that you can go for a swim when you've got your period.
Yeah,
so just, that's really not an issue. You can swim. It's not like a disability having your period, but there we go. I'm good at swimming. It's the only sport I actually enjoy is to swim, and it was ruined for me by sort of bad PE, and I think that's a real problem.
It massively is, and I think it's one of those that, like you say, that time at school, like, it's such a short window for the school to try and get so much in.
The kids, yeah.
And especially then, if you've got to get on a bus, you've got to get changed, you've got to do all of that. It is time consuming unless you can walk to the pool, unless it's at school or whatever. But it's such an important life skill that you can't not do it. And I think that's a way that a lot of it, like I run my own learn swim program, and it's taking that off. So it's like, it's a lot of the time you go to these places, it's either your PE teacher, who is totally not qualified to be a swim teacher, that's teaching you, which totally should not be a thing anymore, by the way, if you're not qualified. And also, it's like one person for 30 kids.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just not possible. It's like, let them take, like we do it, like let us take the swim lesson. Yeah. They're qualified teachers. There's 3 or 4 of them. Let them spread out and get the most of their 30 minutes. It's much better and it's much easier when it runs like that.
It is. My son's, funny enough, a lad who used to volunteer on my campaign, he was a swimming teacher. My children, we were going on holiday somewhere, and I wanted to basically not have to pay attention to them when they were in the pool. This is a great motivator for me. But they were, you know, they were much older than I was when I'd learnt swim, because they'd just had this terrible sort of, like, their PE teacher not qualified, like 35 kids, 25 minutes, that sort of thing. And he took my kids twice on 2 separate occasions for an hour, just the 2 of them and him, and they can then both swim like fish. I was like, that. Well, that was all it took. Like, they just needed a good teacher to actually give them some attention.
And exactly that. It doesn't, like, I think people think that it is something that it's not. It's like riding a bike. Once you can learn how to swim as well, you've got it. It's not like...
Oh, yeah, you can't lose it. Yeah, you can't lose it. Yeah.
No, exactly. So I think people are like, always say to me, it's like, oh, well, it's just not worth it. I'm like, but it is, because you're gaining a skill that they will use if you live a full life. For about 80, 90 years, they will use the skill. Like, it is a long, if you think about it in that aspect, that they will swim. Like, we have 92-year-olds swimming at our local pool that they go every day. It's like they're fixed.
Also,
like,
it's non-impact, isn't it? So it's good exercise for...
You can do it when you're pregnant, when you're injured. It's such a great rehab. And I'm like, you're going to use this for 90 years or 80 years. I'm like, I think it's quite a decent investment. It's like £7.50 for a lesson. It's all right.
Yeah, no, it totally is. And also, if you need the best motivation is, you don't have to watch your kids by the pool. You can get drunk by the pool and feel safe that they are going to be fine. And that was my main motivating driver. Coming from Birmingham, like, you know, we don't have a, you know, I don't need to worry about them near the sea.
No, that's true. Rivers, lakes, maybe. But
yeah, the canal. So how would you sign off your letter to Ian?
Just saying thank you. I don't thank you for the press-ups, but I thank you definitely for the advice, for just giving me my first kind of taster of that enjoyment for swimming and letting my love for the sport grow. So just to thank you.
Oh, I bet Ian's really proud of you, Becky.
Do you know what? I still think he's at the swim club. I genuinely do. His son actually went on to become a coach, a very good one. And I've seen him a couple of times at different things. Just the loveliest family ever that you're just like, oh, you're so lovely. Just those people that you just think they're family. You're like, oh, it's like you're an uncle. You're just so lovely.
Yeah. Oh, they sound a lovely bunch. Well, thank you so much for sharing your letters with me. And I'm going to go for a swim when I'm no longer have COVID. I like to swim in where I live in London. When I'm there for work, there is a swimming pool, and the men from the gym all come into the swimming pool after they have like got all sweaty in the gym, and they jump in, and it is the greatest motivating factor to be better at swimming than them. And so I totally pace them in the pool every single time. I'm just like, I'll show you. And so that it's a mark for feminism for me, being fast at swimming.
To be fair, I love it when you get somebody next to you that wants to race, and then I'm literally like, bye-bye, bye-bye. See you later.
I totally, like, push myself until I'm going to be sick, but I do it for womankind.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Becky. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips. If you want to hear more conversations just like this, make sure you follow Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips on the podcast provider of your choice. And why not write a letter to your friends telling them all about this podcast? You could also follow us on social media. We're at Jess Phillips Pod.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.